Fred Film Radio, il cinema ritrovato, Bologna, Italy.
Fred Film Radio, I'm Matt Micucci from the 2017 Il Cinema Ritrovato in Bologna, and I'm very pleased to be joined by Nick Ebeling, who is the director of a film that's being presented here that's called Along for the Ride. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So very simply, would you be able to tell us a little bit about your movie and what it's about?
You know, it's not a traditional biographical documentary. It's kind of an anti-biographical documentary, kind of like something that would be befitting a major cultural figure like Dennis Hopper, who always worked against the grain and always did things differently. And the film really tries to honor him structurally and visually in that way. So if you're looking for a film that just is about Peter Fonda and Easy Rider, this is not that movie at all.
For you personally, why did you want to talk about Dennis Hopper?
Well, when I was 14 years old, I was with my parents at a racetrack in just outside of Los Angeles called Santa Anita Racetrack, horse racing track, oddly enough. And I was drug along by them to go have lunch and watch the ponies run, as they say. And in the middle of the bar, this great bar that was built in the 1930s or 40s, one of the last great bars, Hollywood-style bars, Dennis Hopper was standing in the middle of the room, and he was holding a cigar. And at that time, I was a really terrible actor, but Dennis was already a hero. I had seen Blue Velvet, like, at 5 years old, so, like, I was already totally fucked in the head, right?
And Candy-colored clown.
Yeah, exactly. I was already there, and I saw him, and I was, like, blown away, and he was, like, such a hero, and I mustered up the courage, you know, to go chat with him. And after that talk, I quit acting. I went to a video store, and I decided to hunt down every Dennis Hopper movie that I could find. And I came across in this, like, cinephile video store on La Brea Boulevard in Los Angeles, I came across this movie called The Last Movie, which most people in the States have never heard of. I think some European kind of cinephiles know about it, but it's very, very obscure where I come from. I saw this movie, put it in the VCR. It was a baked, terrible copy, but the movie grabbed me by the neck in the greatest way ever and became... is still with me today, probably is my biggest inspiration as a filmmaker. And I, after watching that movie, I decided to go to art school. I made experimental films, and that film was the catalyst for all that happening.
Yeah.
And I really owe it all to Dennis Hopper. So that was the kind of the root of the, it's been with me for a long time. Dennis and The Last Movie have been inspiring me for, God, over 20 years now.
Right, and so you decided to pay tribute to that in your documentary. Now, what was the style that you opted for?
Well, you know, everybody in this film, all of these heroes that are part of this great movement of the late 50s, starting in the Ferris Gallery through the 1960s rock and roll into the 70s in Europe, you know, with Wim Wenders, and then back to the States again with David Lynch, all these guys are titans that changed everything for all of us. I'll tell you, I've got to go back a little bit. So, 2.5 years ago, I got a phone call from a producer named Nina Yang Bon Jovi, who was very good friends with Dennis, and she knew how much I loved Dennis and this film called The Last Movie. And she goes, I just got a call from Dennis's very eccentric right-hand man that's been with him or worked with him since the late 60s. You didn't work, that's what she thought. Uh-huh. But... She doesn't know the whole, like, myopic details of Dennis Hopper like I do. So every year is like a massive change with Dennis because he's so innovative and so amazing. So I get so I'm there in like 10 seconds to go meet this guy, and I meet this guy Satya De La Manitou, and he looks like he's out of a John Schlesinger movie or something. You know what I mean? Like, he's just a character. You know, yeah. He's a massive character from the East Coast, New Yorker. Meets like acid hippie, and we start chatting, and I'm like, oh yeah, so you've been around since Easy Rider or before that or the Corman era? And he goes, no, he says, The Last Movie. And I'm like, oh man, like, you know, like a Dennis Hopper, oh man, like, that's the movie, you know, that's the greatest movie, because I'm probably the only person in the world that saw The Last Movie before Easy Rider. I'm probably maybe the only one, right? So that's the one that grabbed me. And so he was so shocked that I knew the film. Because, like, you know, even in their circles, you know, it's obscure, you know, even in Dennis's circles. So that was the catalyst. And I said to myself, God, wouldn't it be cool to roll some tape?
Yeah.
Or not tape, not videotape, but roll some, like, not even film anymore. What do we use? Zeros
stuff?
And ones now? Yeah. Okay, so roll whatever on this guy and see what starts to happen. You know, and so we didn't plan to make a documentary film at all. So we just started doing it. I selected this camera that was a true monochrome black and white camera. We used a lot of very specialized vintage lenses for it because I wanted it to feel like an actual film. I feel like a lot of documentaries now, Dennis has point of view, I wanted to have a point of view, and I thought that these guys were so kind of monolithic in their cool, you know, that we had to pay tribute to that. So we lit it like a traditional studio film from like the, or, you know, indie or whatever, from like the late 60s, you know, and right. It's all done in black and white, it's all lit with the old stuff, and
grainy.
Yeah, I love grain, I'm a big fan of grain.
Me too.
Yeah, and so we just... We just try to pay tribute to how special these people really are, so your eyes would really listen to them. And it's funny because in a place like Hollywood, nobody understands. When you talk to producers or film people, they're like, "Well, where is Peter Fonda? And why is it in black and white? And you know, and all of this stuff, like, you know, and why aren't you paying attention to Easy Rider?" Well, that story's been told before. It's been told many times. So many times that nobody, I think, needs to hear it from anybody else anymore.
Well, also, maybe you want people to watch the last movie and reevaluate it.
Absolutely. Right? Absolutely. I mean, the whole reason between Dennis's right hand, Satya, and I, was to shed light on this film that we both love. It changed his life. He saw a 15-hour cut in New Mexico while Dennis was editing in Dennis's movie theater in 1971, and that was his awakening, you know, and mine was on that little VHS, you know, in my house in the mid-90s, you know, that was mine, and so we connected on that level, and then we just started shooting, and then, you know, Wim Wenders would say, okay, yeah, I want to be in it, and then, you know what I mean, and it really became the story of the last movie, not just the last movie, but what it cost Dennis, because Dennis had final cut on that film.
Yeah.
And he got into a massive war with the studio over it, which is known in that book you were talking about, Easy Riders and Raging Bulls. It's well described, but nobody's ever really taken it from Dennis's side. They say, "Oh, crazy, eccentric, hippie, was on drugs."
Hair.
Yeah, exactly. But you know what? You're not the number one director of your generation in 1969 who opens the doors for everybody else, New Hollywood, to make all these great movies, like literally, like Two-Lane Blacktop. You know, it opens the door for the Last Picture Show to happen, you know, like all of that would eventually change everything. So Dennis opened that door and Easy Rider made a ton of money. It was one of the highest grossing movies of the year, and it cost nothing.
There you go.
And it made $30 million. So for Columbia Pictures. So how do you go from that to getting into a war with the studio head and not being able to work for 16 years? And it was really, we examined that fight for his point of view and for Final Cut and what that cost him was 16 years being blacklisted in Hollywood, which I don't think a lot of people realize, that Dennis Hopper was off the radar for 16 years when he really should have been making movies, starring in movies, you know, like doing, you know, because any other director would have, you know, if a so-called, you know, sophomore slump, they call it sometimes, you know, usually like a director like Mike Nichols does Catch-22. He comes back with another movie, you know, that's a little smaller, and, you know, they rein him in a little bit, and, you know, and then so it goes. But Dennis is kind of cut off and has to work in all these strange and interesting ways. But during that period, he never really sold out, and I have a lot of respect for him for that. And he did a lot of great movies at that time as an actor, and did a lot of great art as a fine artist. And
there you go, because like that's one of the things that people don't know about Dennis Hopper. As well as making movies, he was also making other kinds of arts too.
Yeah, Dennis Hopper is not just the guy from Speed, the bad guy from Speed. I mean, he was a
definitely not.
he was mentored by James Dean. He was in two James Dean films. James Dean was Dennis Hopper's acting teacher.
His best friend of his.
And his best friend. Yeah. Dennis then also was a massively accomplished photographer, and you know, I'm sure you know about that, and shot some of the great pictures in the 1960s, made one of the highest grossing films, and really life-changing films for many people. I mean, Easy Rider is changed culture.
Well,
it changed style. It changed soundtracks. Yeah. It was the first rock and roll movie soundtrack. Like, Dennis is the creator of that. I don't, go ahead.
What were also, we were talking about earlier, in the before the interview, talking about his performance in Blue Velvet, which is...
Oh, yeah. Grand. Yeah, yeah, yeah. In the film, we uncovered amazing footage, Super 8 footage, shot by a German art student on the set of Blue Velvet. So we have that. It's rarely seen stuff. A lot of what's seen in the film is not stuff that you've seen before. We really dug deep. Almost all of it is... never before seen or rarely seen photography and things from Dennis's friends and
home videos and stuff. Like that.
Not even like Super 8.
Super
8 video. I mean, Super 8 film. Pictures that were lost from the last movie. We uncovered 8,000 unseen images from the last movie. I don't know if you know the film Out of the Blue, which is a fantastic movie that Dennis directed in Canada. He couldn't because he couldn't work in America.
He worked in Canada.
He worked in Canada and he replaced the director and did this amazing film you should check out called Out of the Blue, which is the first kind of North American film that looks at punk
rock. Really?
Yeah, and it stars Linda Manns, who you know from
Out of the Blue.
Yeah, you know that amazing Terrence Malick film. You know the little girl.
Badlands?
No, the one after that. That amazing film all shot at Magic Hour. Sorry, everybody.
No, wait a minute.
Linda Manns is the star. She's in our film, and she retired from Hollywood 30 years ago, and she's making one of her first appearances in a very long time in this film. And the film is kind of like Dennis, you know, like it's, I don't know. I mean, it's part narrative. It's part documentary, you know.
Really,
it kind of just doesn't have a classical...
Is that what they're reading it?
No. I want to say... It's not Heaven's Gate, because that's my...
No, and that's
movie.
What I was thinking, too, and it's got heaven in it.
Yeah. Days of Heaven. Days of Heaven, we got it. Linda Manns from Days of Heaven is in it.
Terrence Malick and Richard Gere.
Dean Stockwell, obviously,
movie.
Who was friends with Dennis since the 1950s.
Yeah.
So it really is an exploration into really what the last movie was and what that fight did to him and how he fought the comeback and how really he ended... on top and outlived them all, you know?
Right.
And that's the coolest part of the story. So it just, you know, I think it's like, it could be a lesson to all of us. Like, when someone tells you can't do something you want to do and you believe that it's right, hey, there's silver lining to every story, you know, if you're willing to wait and work hard. You know?
It was also a good, fascinating era. And you mentioned so many figures of great figures in cinema history and music history as well. And they were all somehow interconnected. It's like a very creative era and a very rich era, era.
I've heard from a lot of Dennis's closest friends that he was like he was very shy, but he was like a magnet for all kinds of amazing people. You probably know this because you've seen the last movie, but that was Kris Kristofferson's first appearance on film, and Dennis discovered Kris Kristofferson when he was doing Easy Rider because Chris was working on an oil rig in Louisiana and he just met him, and so Dennis had this way of finding and spotting talent, you know, and it's uncanny. Like, he bought the first Andy Warhol soup cans that nobody understood or wanted for like $75 because like people like, and they were half price because nobody would buy them.
I had no idea.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Sold for $6 million, you know, like the guy he's like nobody else. I mean, so he's a fascinating person to study. And I think a lot of people that write about him or look at him, they kind of dismiss him as just a counterculture troublemaker, you know?
Eccentric guy, kind of, like we said earlier.
Yeah, but he's brilliant.
So, but this movie, you try to get rid of all that kind of...
Well, I mean, that's a part of his personality, absolutely, and that's a part that people love. But
do you think that there was a part in Dennis Hopper that actually enjoyed to have that kind of, to be put in that category?
I think he was an iconoclastic type of guy. And if he wanted to do something, there's no way, and I've heard this from a lot of people, there's no way you were going to convince them of any to do it any differently. Yeah. And I don't think a lot of people in Hollywood do that. I mean, he's a real artist. He's the real deal. And I think that's where the friction comes, because Hollywood is a place that doesn't celebrate the artist, at all, as we know.
It's worse and worse
every year. And I an interesting quote I heard from Dennis was that in relation to the last movie, was that Universal Pictures wanted the last movie. I made the last movie film.
The last movie.
Meaning they wanted it to be a movie.
Yes.
They wanted it to be Easy Rider, Easy Rider 2.
Yes.
You know, and it was not Easy Rider 2. It's an exploration into very heavy stuff. I mean, it was written with, it was Dennis's idea. He wrote it with Stuart Stern, who were Rebel Without a Cause. Fantastic writer. Probably. It's about globalization. It's about Hollywood's responsibility to the rest of culture. And it's really, and it's about Hollywood itself. And it looks at, what is a movie? Like, do we even know? Is it a movie within a movie? Like, let's dissect this idea.
You know, actually, Godard is celebrated for doing things like that. Dennis Hopper does not have the right backing, because, like, you know, if he had been born in France, he would have been celebrated like Godard.
You're right. You're right, because Dennis really admired Godard.
He
was an influence on him.
Oh, yeah.
Just like, also, there's a great film artist that did Devo's, like, first video. Dennis's great friend. He did a little movie that inspired Dennis called Movie, and it was, like, a bunch of, like, just random footage from movies, and he had just like kind of cut it up, and it was shown in an art gallery, and that was like one of the defining moments for Dennis's approach to the editing style.
Just very Dennis. I mean, he had a very unique editing style.
Absolutely. I mean, look at Easy Rider again. Easy Rider is an experimental film. I mean, look at how
that whole final sequence is just amazing.
It's unbelievable. I mean, and think of the movies that Dennis could have made if he wouldn't have gotten into this massive war with Universal Pictures. I mean, he really, like, in those days, that guy, Lou Wasserman, who controlled the studio, was so powerful, he could put out a phone call. And it's over. You know, you think of that. Now it's not so easy to do that, because there are so many mediums for actors to go into if they wind up in a problem. They can just I'll go to Amazon, you know, and make an anthology series. You know what I mean? This is 1971, so it's like when you got, you know, there was only one Hollywood at the time.
That's right.
And, it's an incredible story, and usually when you read into Dennis, it's very vague about this time between 1970 to David Lynch's Blue Velvet, which is 16 years. We really explore that entire time and what he was doing, where he was, and you know, what his friends thought about it.
Right.
And
yeah.
I thought it was important to see really what happened to him for what he was fighting for, you know.
There you go. Well, we're completely out of time. But it was very interesting talking about not only your film but Dennis Hopper as well, because that's what I like to do when I come to the Cinema Ritrovato, just talk about the movies and also the people that made the movies. Very, very interesting figures in film history. And of course, Dennis Hopper is often, like you said, placed in a category that's, as you know, the one-hit wonder, the you know, eccentric guy, not easy to work with, blah, blah, blah. But he needs to be reevaluated. Full stop.
Absolutely. And I hope that everybody we'll take another look at the last movie.
Right. And look at your movie, Along for the Ride.
Yeah.
Along for the Ride.
But we did it for you, Dennis, wherever you are.
There you go. Well, on that
All
note,
right, man.
Thanks very much for joining us. It was a pleasure. And this is Fred Film Radio, the Festival Insider.
Fred Film Radio, 24/7 on fred.fm and smartphone apps.